All right, good morning. Welcome to the August Board of EMS meeting. We're glad you're here. We'll go ahead and call to order. We have some new board members that I'd like to have introduce themselves. So we'll start with Dave Johnston.
Yes, sir. Dave Johnston. Currently, I'm the chief with Reno County EMS. I've been in EMS in the state of Kansas since 1990. I've been a regular attendant of the peanut gallery for about 15 years or so. So I do a lot of advocating on behalf of Kansas EMS. I've been involved with the Kansas EMS Association over the past. And just really excited to be here, trying to have an opportunity to have some meaningful impact on Kansas EMS through the board.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Foat.
Good morning, Charles Foat. A variety of roles in EMS in Kansas started in about 2002, and I think I started attending meetings as part of the peanut gallery back in 2002. So my primary focus currently is education, and love the opportunity to be involved at a different level.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chick.
Good morning. Steve Chick. I'm the fire chief at Consolidated Fire District 2 in Johnson County. Like Dave and Charles, spent a career in EMS and in Kansas. I have thoroughly enjoyed it and just happy to be here and contribute in any way I can.
Okay, thank you. All right, we'll move on to approval of the minutes from the June meeting. I'll take a motion to approve.
I move that we approve the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Essex.
I will
second. All right, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Okay. Who is online?
Dr. Payman.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Powell, right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. We'll go ahead and move on to public comment. We have Chrissy Martell from KMSA.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and the board. I will do my very best to keep it brief. I will try my best, but I might go over 3 minutes, and please allow me to indulge you for those extra moments. Thank you for the opportunity to provide public comment. For those that do not know me, my name is Chrissy Bartell. I'm the president of KMSA, as well as the chair of the KMSA Peer Support Society. Almost 25 years ago, hard to believe, I signed up for an EMT class because I wanted to help my community. I had no intention of leaving my teaching job, and quite frankly, I didn't really understand what I was getting into. No one talked about the impact of this profession that could have on our mental health. I entered EMS with rose-colored glasses and bright eyes, ready to help people. But it didn't take long for me to understand and see the toll that this work takes on EMS providers. At that time, it was a largely quiet, unspoken burden. We didn't talk about it, we didn't acknowledge it, and we certainly didn't ask for help. We have made progress since then, but we still have significant work to do. Last week marked the 10-year anniversary of the suicide death of a friend of mine. He was an EMS provider, attended board meetings, and was a friend to many people in this room. It's been 10 years. After his funeral, I remember conversations among people who had been concerned about his well-being. People had noticed things. People were worried, but no one knew how or had the courage to start that difficult conversation. 10 years later, I wonder whether the outcome might have been different if there had been a clear, trusted, and readily available path to help. Unfortunately, that's not the only experience that stayed with me. At the October 2019 Board of EMS Investigations Committee meeting, one of my EMS providers had a case before the committee involving concerns about substance abuse. Those concerns have been reported to the board, but because circumstances were not employment-related, the case was ultimately closed. Exactly 2 weeks later, I lost that provider to a substance abuse overdose. I could list many others that have been lost to suicide, struggle with alcoholism, or substance abuse. I share these stories not to assign blame. I share them because they demonstrate a gap in our system that still exists today. Over the last decade, a first responder mental health has become a significant focus of my work. I've had many difficult conversations with EMS providers who are struggling. One theme comes up again and again, and that's fear. Providers are afraid to admit that they have a problem with alcohol or another substance. They fear what will happen to their certification. They fear losing their career, disciplinary action, and they fear the professional and personal consequences of simply saying, "I need help." When the perceived consequence of asking for help is losing the profession that is a significant part of their life and their identity, people learn to stay quiet. The silence can have devastating consequences. Right now, when an EMS provider asks me what will happen to their certification if they admit they have a problem and need help, I cannot point them to a defined impaired provider program and say, "Here is the pathway. Here is how we get you help." That is the gap that I'm asking this board to help us close. Kansas EMS providers currently do not have a profession-specific impaired provider pathway comparable to programs available to all of the other healthcare professions in Kansas. They need a structured process that identifies the impairment, connects a provider with appropriate treatment and monitoring, protects the public, and when appropriate, provide a pathway for that individual to safely return to practice. An impaired provider program is not ignoring impairment or lowering our standards. It is about accountability with a pathway to recovery. Patient safety must always remain paramount, but protecting patients and supporting providers do not have to be competing goals. A well-designed impaired provider program can do both. We should want providers to come forward before the impairment results in patient harm, a disciplinary case, the loss of a career, or the loss of a life. We need to create a system where asking for help is viewed as an opportunity for early intervention rather than something providers believe they must hide until it is at a crisis point. Following discussion of this issue at the July Legislative Committee meeting, KIMSA has taken an active role in exploring what it will take to bring an impaired provider program into operation in Kansas, but we cannot do this alone. That is why I'm here today. KIMSA is committed to moving forward an impaired provider program from an idea into operation. Today, I'm asking the Kansas Board of EMS for two specific things: regulatory support and financial support. First, we need your regulatory support to establish a framework that allows impaired provider program to function effectively. Providers need to know there's a legitimate, structured pathway for seeking help, one that provides appropriate accountability and monitoring while creating an opportunity for treatment, recovery, and when appropriate, a safe place for work. Without the regulatory framework, we can create resources, but we cannot create the comprehensive program Kansas EMS providers need. Second, this will require a financial commitment. A credible impaired provider program cannot exist on goodwill alone. It requires resources to administer the program, provide professional support, establish monitoring, accountability, ensure that it is sustainable. We are willing to be an active partner in this effort, but funding will be necessary to make it operational, accessible to EMS providers across Kansas. I recognize that the ask for regulatory change and funding is significant, but I would also ask us to consider the cost of doing nothing. What is the cost when a provider is too afraid to admit they're struggling? What is the cost when we intervene only after something has gone terribly wrong? What is the cost of losing a trained EMS professional, a colleague, a friend, or a life when earlier intervention may have changed the outcome? We have an opportunity to build something better. This is not about excusing impairment. It is not about lowering standards. It is certainly not about compromising patient safety. It is about creating a system where public protection and provider recovery can exist together. We can send a clear message to EMS professionals across the state. If you are struggling, asking for help does not mean losing everything. For too long, providers struggle with substance abuse and impairment. They have been left with the perception that their choices are to remain silent or risk losing everything. We can offer another choice and a path to help. Together, the board, KIMSA, and our EMS community have an opportunity to send a very clear message to every EMS professional in Kansas. If you are struggling, asking for help does not have to be the end of your career. There can be accountability, treatment, recovery, and moving into a positive path. I ask you to help us create this path, providing this framework and financial support necessary. We have talked for years about taking better care of the people that take care of others. We owe it to those people we serve to ensure that our providers are safe to practice, and we owe it to our EMS professionals to make sure that when they are ready to ask for help, there is somewhere for them to turn without disciplinary action only. This is an opportunity to put action behind those words. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We have another person on the list, Chris Cannon. Are you on the line? Are you here?
Yes, sir. Dr. Horning, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, hear you fine.
Yeah, speaking on behalf of the Kansas EMS Association, I had a written statement prepared for the wellness program. I think Chrissy just hit it out of the park with her statement. The only comment I will provide is that we've been actively working with probably most well-established and well-respected wellness programs in the state to get a framework together. We will have a significant ask for regulatory help and financial support from the board that will come soon. Thank you for your time, and I'll see you again in October.
Okay. Yeah, Joe and I actually talked about this a few weeks ago, and I think we need to go ahead and get something set up on the either committee or agenda to start working this way. I don't know I'm sure we can figure out something on the regulatory side. It's all Joe as to what kind of financial help we can give or organize or write grants or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So anyway, we'll work on this. I'm not sure which committee this kind of falls into, but we'll work on that and get something set up to discuss by the October meeting. So any other board members have any comments regarding this? Okay. All right. Thanks for your comments. We will work on it. All right. We'll move on to standing items today. Executive committee actions. We did not meet. No variances. Are there any reports from education or planning and operations?
Pardon me? No, but I can make them up.
There you go.
We had a robust meeting that lasted quite a while. Regulations were discussed in depth, and in fact, we had a member of the committee, and then that led into some real discussion about the investigations process, and I think that's causing a lot of concern out in the state of Kansas because of some inconsistencies and saying such as that.
Inspections,
I'm sorry. He does a good job. But so when we got into the depth of that, as I was saying, a motion was made to actually bring an idea to as a moratorium for the rest of the year to hold inspections, and that died for the lack of a second, but we had lots of conversation about that, and our legal counsel advises that we do have some flexibility in policies. The regulation process and the statute process has become quite extensive. But policies, we as a board and as committees can take a good, strong look at that. And I was going to talk about this under old business, but I think what we need to do, and guide me, Chair and legal counsel, whether we need to make a motion to this, and we've talked about this, we need to form a group much like we have done in the past, made up of staff, KMSA, any other members that sit on the planning and operations committee, to take a look at the investigation policies and what we can do to improve those by continuing to protect the public, but at the same time, make it, for lack of a better word, a friendlier approach to services. I think that we need to be an organization that is there to help support, not only protect the public, but support services and give them as much help as they can to do a good job. And I'll give you a perfect example of that is that under the current situation, 4x4s, sterile 4x4s, the key word is sterile, but I can tell you that I've been told by service directors that they order 4x4s for a particular company, and it's the same company, but they come in, some of them come in a non-sterile situation, even though they're packaged, and then some come in a sterile, and if that package is open or has a tear in it, then that's a conflict. We need to be able to set, and this is personal opinion, but we need to be able to separate things that have a direct impact on a service being 100% successful, then worrying about things like whether I got a Band-Aid that has a package that's ripped open. And I think a group of people can do that. And we need to get that done frequently and quickly because it's become a huge problem across the state. And I would, if you allow me the moment, I'd open it up to other people on the committee to give a comment on what their recommendation or response would be.
Yeah, well, that's let's discuss it. That's what we're here for.
Mr. Chair, I'll offer up that yesterday I was probably making motions to the point of driving Terry a little bit nuts on change, but I will start off. I mean, the overall piece in dealing with the inspection, what was the first ask laid forth is a discussion on the regulatory philosophy of a shift to where it is compliance assistance versus a strictly punitive. I realize that's supported by statute in reg. I think it's just us working forward to see how that is moved forward. And with that, I think the commitment that needs to occur out of that is strategic planning. There are things that we're operating on that are woefully out of date. We're operating on bylaws that are out of date, the inspection policies. We've looked, they're 2016, and they're no longer following those policies. So that was the request, was to form a subcommittee to work forward to vet through those policies and find a path forward. I think I want to make sure I use the correct term. Was it delegated authority, or what's the... Concurrent delegated authority, and how do we return to that, to offering that to inspectors for minor occurrences with that as we go through and define those out? So local actions. I think the consternation not only was with the inspection process, but also how it winds up into investigations. And so the clear path of how we're able to address those issues then, so we don't end up in front of investigations. And as we've been told, that due process is really not allowed until then an order is issued out of investigation. So we would like to figure a path forward out of that. And I think it's important that we get stakeholders together to move that forward.
What, a few meetings ago, I actually sent this to the Planning and Operations Committee to, you know, work on cleaning up the inspections process, you know, get rid of the whether or not the Yonker goes in a sterile package or not, or the, you know, and I was hoping that could be accomplished out of planning and operations to see if that, but maybe you're thinking that that's more of an issue than what can be sorted out in a couple committee meetings.
I think what's occurred, the planning ops, the focus out of that was on regulations. And so there have been multiple regulatory changes, but as with the current process, or request for regulatory changes, the current process is it's 9 months to a year before we'll see any of those, and the inspections are going to continue
right
during that pace. So absolutely the direction on the yanker tips and things like that need to occur. And whether that's committee, the planning ops has the ad hoc membership on there, and that's what was used on the workforce or task force to address the regulations. So
I think that's fine. I'm certainly fine with setting up a separate committee to sort this out. Thing is, it sounds like it would take at least one good long day or longer, and that would be if there is plenty of pre-work done. What I don't want this is to set up a committee for this, and this committee still be active and meeting a year from now with no final product. And so that's why I'm kind of concerned about that. But I think it would be, if nobody has any objection from the board, I think we could have Mr. David go ahead and set up such a committee and see if you can get some things accomplished and, maybe present it to the December board meeting.
My goal would be to even try to get a meeting maybe in September. And
okay.
Maybe, like you said, maybe take a full day to work it all out. And I don't know that there's, and Dave either disagree with me or Joe disagree with me, I don't think there's a huge amount of stuff to get deep into. I mean, because everybody in the room and everybody that has a service wants to provide good service and follow the rules. I mean, it's out there. It's just that some of those things that are outdated, that in interpretation is currently being discussed, we just need to clear those up. And I think we can get it done fairly quickly, and I agree with you. We don't want to stretch this out because, as Dave pointed out, inspections are continuing to happen. To that, Joe, I would tell you that at least the Planning and Ops Committee needs a copy of the current inspection policy that we're working under. I mean, you can email that to us or mail it in certified mail or whatever is easiest for you.
I can send you the last approved copy, but I will say that the reason that it is not being followed is because the regulations that are referenced no longer exist.
Well, put me a separate page together to explain how that happened.
Yep.
And that's why we got good legal counsel we'll go from there. And I would tell you that on policies, I met with Sam, and he's more than willing to help guide the group through policy changes because that's what his expertise is in law. So that's an excellent asset to have with our group. So do we need a motion or just your
direction to
do
it? No, I don't think so.
It?
You can, as long as you promise to do it and nobody on the board here has an objection, well, I think we can go ahead and go.
I promise.
Okay. One thing that you still need to address and think about is there's a couple, when we did this last review, there were a couple services that had multiple expired meds, had defibrillators that didn't work, and these inspections are announced. That's not a surprise, and so to me, when we talked a lot yesterday about danger to the public and investigations, I think if you go to a service that realizes there's going to be an inspection tomorrow and their defibrillator doesn't work or their CPR device, the batteries are dead or whatever, I think there needs to be some sort of consequence for that, besides awareness. And so that, I want you to think through that too.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think moving that information to investigations or moving it down the line if it can be corrected. Theoretically, and I agree with you 100%, but theoretically, if I have an expired med and I have one that's current in the supply room, that's an easy fix. If we don't have any of those, or if you have a dead monitor or something such as that, that could be, you know, a much greater problem. And I agree with you. I've been a service director in two services, and we spent lots of times when we got our notice to make sure everything was the way it was supposed to be. And I think maybe KMSA could help that with an education process with service directors. I mean, if that's a big problem, and Joe says that it is from the data that's coming in on inspections, then we as a group collectively, everyone in the room, need to do a better job of trying to educate all those people about how important it is and what some of the ramifications are down the road.
What I'm referring to is you know you're going to have an inspection tomorrow and you don't do anything about it, and you go out and you have a call that evening and your defibrillator is dead. You know, I think they think this needs to be a kind of a ongoing process within the services, and you know, we can't fix all of that, but it would be nice to, you know, maybe ingrain that a little bit more in there.
I agree with you. We'll move it forward.
Yeah, we beat that one to death. Anything else from planning and operations?
No, that took up more than a majority of the time.
Okay, well, thank you. It's something that we need to work on. Let's see if we can get her done, and we'll expect something, you know, on the agenda in October, I hope. So we didn't, investigations did meet. I was lucky enough to have two summaries here. I got one from Joe and one from Sam. Sam's is shorter. So I'll read it. We heard seven cases involving applicants for EMS certification. We approved all seven. Those were for people with criminal histories. Two cases involving unprofessional conduct. One resulted in a fine and the other a revocation. We had 27 cases involving sponsoring or educations who failed to notify in 30 days. We had 16, we accepted local action. 9, we assessed a $50 civil penalty. Because of multiple infractions, we assessed a $450 civil penalty because of one had multiple infractions. And we assessed $2,550 civil penalty because the organization had two violations and failed to cooperate with the board's investigation. And we also had some healthy conversation regarding this, in that I asked Dr. Foat and Joe to get together and see if there's anything we could do to sort out why this is an issue, at least between some groups. Joe did say that out of all these cases, what there was in the 30s probably of people, he said there were also 5,000 that were completed. So this is not a huge problem, but yet a lot of these services are large services that are either forgetting or just not doing it. So I asked them to see if they could sort it out. And but otherwise, that's all we had in investigations. Let's go on to office update with Joe.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to start off with just some of the successes we've had within the agency since we last met. So our folks have issued about 1,170 applications in the last 65 days. So applications are more than just an application for certification. It's the way that things get communicated to us. That could be starting up services, new ambulances. That could be just changing service staff positions, things like that. But about 30% of those were provider applications coming in. So that's a pretty significant number, which is what we would expect coming off of that spring semester of courses ending. So typically they start gaining their licensure during the month of June and into July. About 23% of those were performance of a criminal history record check and clearing that. So that involves the review of those that come back to us. And then although it's only been open now for 7 days, 17% of those are EMS provider renewals. So my staff is chucking through those quickly. So that's awesome. It's going through. We assisted with conducting 10 of the BLS exam sites. We had 3 mobile testing sites where we took the written test out to the site as opposed to them having to go to a Pearson View testing center. It's one of many things that we offer to our providers is bringing that mobile test out to their location so they don't have travel and other costs associated on their end to finish that exam. I want to quickly shout out to Sedgwick County EMS, Butler County EMS, and Emporia Fire for supporting their honor guard personnel in their participation in the National EMS Memorial Service on July 18th. So we did have a Kansas honoree being recognized this year, and it's great to have a good, strong performance. Those guys do a phenomenal job of representing the state, and I know that that typically is deep reaching down into extra budgets and such for those services to be able to provide support for their folks to go. I know that some of those honor guard members actually go on their own as well and cover their own expenses. So again, thanks to those 3 services for supporting their members and making sure that that occurs and Kansas continues to be strongly represented at what I believe is a very necessary service every year to make sure that we don't forget. The internal review that we talked about in June is in full swing. So I know that we talked about the inspection policy. It hadn't been updated since 2016. I'll say that was one of the first 3 that we looked at was the inspection process. The other 2 that were in that first group were both investigations. Those are received through an internal complaint and an external complaint. So those are done. We did identify that the inspection policy is woefully outdated and most of the regulations that exist there are no longer accurate. So that got updated as part of the recommendation into that internal review. It just hasn't gone to the rest of the process yet. So I'll make sure that I provide that update to Terry and the group as they go through so that they've got both aspects of that. So we've got 20 of our most common processes have been, we've completed the review on those and have some basic recommendations that we'll push off to the executive committee when we get the rest of these completed and off to them. We have 32 application processes that have been reviewed with majority of the procedures involved in those 32 applications also having been reviewed and going through and just making sure that we have those where they need to be. So that's been the crux of things. This has taken a whole lot longer than what I thought it was going to, which no surprise, it's a lot of stuff to look at and coming through and then to mix in with everything else that's been going on. So this week, we effected and announced the 60-day public comment period for the internal review component. So all the legislators should have got an email on Tuesday. Sorry that that was on Election Day. It just happened to be the way that things timed on that going out. Wednesday evening, program managers, instructors, and sponsoring organizations, I believe, received their notification along with service directors and assistant service directors. The reason for the split on those were actually sent to the program managers, service directors, those folks out of my personal email account. The state of Kansas does limit me to 1,000 emails a day being sent out. That was roughly a little over 500. So that was why it came out of my personal state account on that going out to those folks and then why we also separated off. We wanted to make sure that the legislature received it directly from us. So, and then our bulk send was yesterday morning, about 7:30, I think, is when it kicked off. So, it took a while. So there were 10,850 emails pushed out from our system to every certified provider in the state asking for comments to come through. As of late last night, we've gotten or we've received 79 comments back through into that system. So that's great. We'll continue to grow as time goes on. So October 5th is when that closes as it's going through. Oh, and then also I should announce yesterday it was published in the Kansas Register as well that there is that notice of public comment period. So we will see how those things come back, and good luck to those on the executive committee when all those comments get to be reviewed. Any questions about that part? All right. Other things I was directed to do from the June meeting, did meet with Ed Klump twice regarding the emergency medical dispatching in Kansas. I think we're really close to having a recommendation back, which was ultimately the request of Ed. We were assisting him on that, was to make sure that we had something that went back to ensure that emergency medical dispatching is available, not necessarily required of every seat, but available to every 911 caller. Those meetings have been awesome. We tied in the 911 board on the last one to make sure that we weren't doing anything that would upset them or would go against what they're already trying to do. So great work there. I anticipate we'll have something ready here within the next couple weeks to push on. July brought us the KMSIS Users Group meeting and the Legislative Meeting Summit. That's two back-to-back days in Salina. The KMSIS Users meeting, we unlocked the, I'm calling it assistive interaction components in the state's electronic patient care reporting system. So the system itself calls them AI. It is a completely closed system. So it is not going out to the Internet of Things to look at things. It stays completely locked within our patient care reporting system and can only look inside our patient care reporting system. It is not an active learning system either, so it is not necessarily learning me as a provider as I'm entering things. It's just as updates come from the company as to things that they understand, they can better write that's how it will grow. But it is not looking at any of our data to do such. It is simply looking at their test data to make those changes. So those are the two big key components I want to make sure we make note of, because those are two very key components in state's policy on generative AI. So even though this is not necessarily considered generative AI, this is partial in there, and so it's best for us to just follow the state's policy on that as well. And again, it's completely closed, and it does no learning whatsoever. So we're very clear on that side of it. What it does is two methods of entry. Through a capture, they can take a picture of a driver's license. It will extrapolate off the driver's license the patient's name, their date of birth, their address, and say, hey, this looks to be the patient's first name. This looks to be the patient's last name. This looks to be where they live. Would you like to include this in your patient care report? To which the provider says yes or no. If the provider says yes, it just saves them having to do keystrokes, and it puts it in where it belongs. It will also record audio, so if you prefer dictation and you want to dictate what you're saying, it will record that up to 2 minutes, I think, of audio. It will bring it out in a typed fashion, and then it comes back through and does the same thing. It says, oh, it appears that you said that you had a male patient. It looks like they were 45 years old. It looks, you know, as you're going through, they were complaining of this. Do you want to put this into your patient care report? They click the button, it goes into their patient care report, into those areas. So always a user intervention component of that going through and such. What I find the most fun part about the whole thing, because I'm weird and techie that way, if you have that provider that would prefer to just sit and write a complete narrative out and not worry about where these boxes are going, they can actually type a narrative out, put it in that system, click a button at the top, and it will go through their narrative and look and find out where those things should be going into the report. It does completely defeat the purpose of a narrative at that point, because you should have the other boxes completed for other reasons, and the narrative just cover the part there. But it's another tool that helps them get things where they need to be and helps us on the data reporting side of things. So great system on that. The other component on the entry side of it is a quality assurance check is really what it comes down to. So another button down at the bottom, if they click on it, then it goes through the entire report as a whole and says, hey, your narrative said it was a 45-year-old patient, but your date of birth up here and where you typed in the age said they were 75. Which one's right? And you can say, well, you know, neither one is right and we'll enter something else. Or you can say, nope, I'd just prefer to have the two things different and keep going on. But it gives you that ability. It's, as it's looking through, it's saying, hey, these things don't seem to mesh quite well. So what we think that will give our services is just a little bit of another tool in their toolbox. to try to look through and make sure the report itself is complete. What we have heard from services that have used it so far is from the ones that have shared with us, they didn't know how poorly they were writing patient care reports until they pushed that button, and then it's like, oh my goodness, we have a lot of disconnects just going through, which if that's the case and that's what they're encountering, it's probably going to clean up billing on the backside, and this might actually streamline some of that coming through. So I'll pause there because I know, I think at least one service at the table is using this. You have anything you want to add?
The AI portion?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we found it incredibly useful. Simply, our deputy chief, Monica Heller, is in the back discussing the piece about on our billing side. Our billers are able to take that. They run it, and they find mismatches immediately. We've transitioned that to Cruise, so it's not even having to slow down, hopefully soon, as we get all that established. So it's been a great add.
Okay. So it is definitely in its infancy. It's been in the system for a while. We just unlocked it in July. So the third component of it is incident lists. So as they pull up incident lists, more on the service side of things as opposed to the individual provider. The individual provider can only see their own calls in the system. Services have the ability to see all. But if they say, hey, I need to look real quick, show me all of the runs that where there was a cardiac arrest in the last 60 days. It will then generate that incident list just based upon their common language going through. And so they may want to look. Larger services, probably a bigger benefit on that side of it. So,
Representative Clayton.
Thank you. Especially to that last, when it comes to generating information from a patient's chart, is that what it's doing?
No, it's actually taking a complete listing and then just narrowing the listing down based upon what you ultimately said. I just want to see runs that deal with this type of incident. So if I'm doing trauma record abstraction as part of my service, I need to go through all runs that deal with traumas in order to get that data into another system. This gives them a tool to not have to go out and individually search all of those runs to find out which ones are there, but just they still have access to it. It's not giving them access to anything they can't already see.
Has it been accurate? Has it been tested for accuracy?
It's okay at the moment. Okay. Yeah, it's getting better as they go through. I would not necessarily use it reliably to say that. But again, it's narrowing down a list that's already available to me. I can see everything that it's reporting back. It's just giving me a little better look. All right. The other component within the Chemsys users group meeting, we did tweak a validation rule or a couple rules dealing with things that we just commonly see missed. And so those have both been applied, which unfortunately with the way our system works, when folks open older records, it rescores them. And so everyone tries to get to that 100. And when they do to get to that 100, since we tweak these rules, if they reopen it, it does reapply the new rules. And if they don't meet, it does give them a score that's less than 100. So it's okay. And a score less than 100 is okay. So. Legislative meeting summit is all within your packet under new business. I won't even touch on that at this point. And then the last success that I've got, we hired a research and analysis director. So Chad's position, which has been vacant for over a year now, we do have an individual starting on August 17th. Her name's Jenna Seddon. She comes to us. We poached her from the state of Colorado, where she was dealing with the same electronic patient care reporting system and the same licensing system that we use just in the state of Colorado. So very excited about seeing her coming over and getting started. All right, I'm going to go to a pinch point real quick and then talk about the regulations. So our pinch point, we had a budget proviso. It's been termed in the state Section 54U that did affect and impact our regional funding just because of where it's at. So 54U states that in order to receive funds, you have to make an application. Upon the application being approved, you get half of the funding up front. Then upon some verification that you're getting closer to the end of your goals or the metrics that you stated that you would achieve. There'll be a reevaluation. That's when the other half gets released. So the actual advice on how this was going to be handled within the state system, because the budget proviso itself was directed at the Department of Administration, which then ultimately trickles down to the rest of us, didn't come out until late June. Our fiscal year starting in July made that a very short notice out to our regions to say, hey, by the way that we've been doing funding in the past, which was send us your financial reports for the previous year, we send out the first half of funding, can't be followed. We've got to follow this new process on the state side of things. So we met with all the region chairs and other personnel within the region that were needing to be included within this to just, one, let them know here are the requirements of 54U, and here's what ultimately we need to see. We're still learning the system as it's going through. They have not advised us this periodic review, when it's going to happen, when it's going to occur, how it's going to occur. So I have equated it to the regions as we seem to be in the midst of flying the plane and trying to weld the wing at the same time. So it's been quite the process going through. I do have applications in from two regions right now. I anticipate by within the next 3 weeks, we'll have two more regions that will have submitted their requests. And so,
which two have you gotten?
Received three and one.
Okay.
So, any questions about that budget proviso? I will say that was not directed at EMS, that is directed at the state as a whole. So we were just simply caught in the crossfire on it. We're very small and we did not rise to making it on the radar on that one. All right. Regulations. You had three that you adopted in June. Those went into full effect just last Friday, July 31st. So the catch on that one was why they didn't go any quicker was the certification of the public hearing, which we were advised based upon our adoption date still had to be done. The Division of Budget didn't get that knocked out until just shortly after the fiscal year started. So that is why that went later. Usually that would have been, once mm-hmm. you adopt it, it usually goes into effect by the end of that month. But this one took a little bit longer on that aspect of it. We did have seven that entered into the public comment period yesterday. So they were published in the Kansas Register. They're active in the public comment period with a public hearing scheduled on Tuesday, October 6th at 10 a.m. Three of those are for authorized activities. Four of them are for educational standards and just getting those updated. So those are seven that are currently in the public comment period. I would fully anticipate those will be on your agenda for October for possible adoption. The three that are dealing with the authorized activities, even if you do do end up approving those in the October meeting, those are subject to Senate Bill 30. So we'll have to go through that process, which is getting that over to legislative research and get legislative ratification on those before they can actually go into effect. That leaves us with two remaining that are actively in the process. So they're both with the Division of Budget. They're awaiting approval of their economic impact statement. The first one is definitions, and I'm not sure what the hang-up is on that, because definitions very rarely, if ever, have an economic impact. And what we defined was unprofessional conduct. So for an operator, which you guys all remember the conversation on that one. So the second one we took action on in June is 109.17.1, sponsoring organizations and aligning the qualified instructors. Right before your June meeting, the Attorney General's office told us, hey, you need to include this same language within the field internship component, to where the education committee said, yep, that's what we'll go with. They took that, brought that back to you as the board. You as the board said, yep, let's go with that. If that's what it needs, we put that back into the process. Cleared the Department of Administration, got back to the Attorney General's office. After 3 weeks, we got a response back that said, hey, you remember that argument that you made about 17-1 when we told you that, no, you needed to include it here? You might have been right. And not you might have been right, you were right. We need you to go back and use the first version, because the first version actually does what you want it to do. This one that we told you, that's not, no. Your legal argument was right on the first one. So we started back through the process again with the first version. They did expedite their review on that, and so it is sitting in the Division of Budget now, waiting for its economic impact statement approval. So a little frustrating on the movements going through that one, and it took, you know, added another month onto the process easily from that whole side of it, almost two. But those are where the regulations are at. So again, if all goes well, we should have 7 regs for you ready for consideration of adoption at the October meeting. Any questions on that?
So is your staffing in the office complete now, or do you have any openings still?
I am still short a compliance manager.
Okay. So. All right. Well, moving on. Do we need to have discussion about the legislative meeting at all, or just the fact that it's in the budget to look at and so forth?
So I provided in the board packet for you to look at. In looking through, there are not a lot of requests that were specific to the board, but there are a lot of topics that are discussed that you guys might want to consider. So we had board members present at the meeting. If you'd like them to share their take on it.
I wasn't there, so.
You're talking about in Salina?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I thought it was really well attended, and it proved that there's a lot of interest out there. How many people were there?
This was actually, there were just a little over 40, but it was actually less attended this year than it has been previously.
Really?
But 40 is still a good number to bring to.
Yeah, I thought it was well done, and they had a lot of good comments, and Joe was very open to almost all of those comments, and of course, recognize the fact that with a new group of people on this side of the table that there would be some changes and that we'd be looking at some things. But I thought it was really, really well done. And again, I would reiterate, you know, communication with all those folks is really, really good. So thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, let's we're down to new business. Next thing is we need to elect a vice chair, just in case I need to go to the bathroom. That one kind of flopped. Anyway. So. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I need all the support I can get. We need a vice chair. He takes over if I'm ill or can't make the meeting or whatever, and runs the whole show. So I'll open the floor to nominations for vice chair.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to nominate Dr. Charles Foate for that position of vice chair, given his extensive history in EMS. Extensive history. Currently the executive director for the National EMS Educators Association. I think he would be a fine addition to the board in that capacity.
Okay. Do we have any other nominations? I'm hearing none. I'd welcome a motion for nominations to cease. Okay. Second from Representative Essex. Okay. Well, seeing that there's no opposition, we'll go ahead and take a vote. All in favor of Dr. Foate taking over the vice chair position, signify by saying aye.
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 Okay. Well, congratulations. You've got the side here. So, all right. Moving on, just a couple things, board discussion. I think with new folks on the board, and I'm sliding off the board here after the end of the year, it's probably time to kind of take a look and see what the future of the board's going to be as far as projects, needs, and so forth. You know, we've had, since I've been on the board, I think we've had two strategic planning sessions. The first one was that I went to was back in 2008 when the National Highway Transportation Safety Board kind of set out a new set of guidelines for what EMS in a state should look like. And so we basically met and talked about all those things to see. And it was nice because for a strategic planning meeting, it gave us a bunch of bullet points to look at and see if we needed things to work on. Then we had another meeting, I can't remember how long ago, where we kind of invited the public along with the board, and that wasn't quite as successful because it was kind of we didn't narrow down the subject matter enough. And so anyway, that I think that's something that we'll need to start working on. So we need to, and I don't know when you want to do that, but I would guess you'd probably want to maybe do that after the first of the year, once you have a new chair in place, between now and whenever you do that, get a set of guidelines to guide your guide the things that you wanna do. Does anybody have any comments or thoughts about the process? Yes,
Mr. Chair. I'll offer up. I'm glad we're moving forward some sort of strategic planning. I think sooner the better would be optimal for that. I think a big part that will play into that perhaps is some of the survey results. You'd mentioned that those will go to the executive committee. Will they be shared with the board or the public, those results?
So the internal review, we were going to share them all with the executive committee. I have no problem sharing them with the board as an entirety. They're public records, so I don't. I think they'd be available to the public to view as well. So,
I think those would be an excellent point to work through, and perhaps some professional assistance in that strategic planning to help guide the entire board through.
That definitely, if you get the right person, that I believe that definitely helps. So anyway, that was one project I thought, you know, we needed to start work on. So we will, Mr. Johnston, I may have you work with Joe about, you know, getting that ball rolling, what to do with that, and start working on dates and so forth. But you're right, I think we probably need to wait until that's in. I don't know if the time between October and December is a good time to try to do it, because that gets kind of crazy schedule wise. But anyway, but I'll task you to that.
All right, thank you.
Joe, was there anything else on the board discussion that was on your list? Okay.
Yeah, I was just on there for you guys to have a discussion about things with the new members. I anticipate there'd be other topics that you'd want, if there's anything you're needing to direct us to look into for future meetings, more than happy to do so.
Okay. Mr. Johnston?
Yes, sir. So is the Monday, will we have the service director's call? Is that correct? Okay. So I know coming out of yesterday's investigations committee, I know that there's going to be a lot of discussion that was thrown around, particularly on one case. And that was dealing with clarification on employee drug screening. And through that, what appears to those who are not on the committee, that it appears as though service is supposed to mandatorily report those to the board, if the way it was interpreted. And I believe that was an employment screening, and it was THC. I think there is a lot of questions already existing around that, whether that's we are supposed to report things like that. And
it was at a reg. Oh, I'm sorry.
It's I read through the regulations and the statutes on that, it's in the regulations that any possibility of working under a type 1 hallucinogen was reportable. So,
and I'll be honest with you, the way my agency is interpreted is impaired. And so an employment screen, if they're working impaired, impressional conduct will move forward with. But in an employee screen where that would then result in every provider in the state who's consumed THC technically is violated. I'm not trying to get overly technical, but I know there's going to be questions on Monday about this. So I would be prepared and look for an answer. And my question is precedent set with this that we are to report employee pre-employment screenings even, I guess.
So without going into a whole lot of detail into the case, try to stay out of this, and Sam can tell me to shut up if he needs to. And he's ready on the edge to do so, it looks like. This was deeper than just a pre-employment screening, although that was what the conversation yesterday had. So there was a period of time where the individual did provide care and bookended positive results. And so there were instances where patient care was provided and he was under the influence of the Schedule I drug. So that was why it triggered a requirement for reporting, is because there was care rendered while inebriated under the influence, and to see if there was anything that was done on that aspect. So when they came up to termination, that was the triggering event.
Okay. So, and I think the clarification that will come out, and I'm certainly not trying to be argumentative, I'm setting up for success on this, is the piece is a positive THC does not indicate impairment. It intends that they've had contact with that at some point during the time frame.
And
yeah, so that's different. It's the so be a point of discussion, I'm sure, moving forward.
Okay, anybody else have any comments? Yes, Mr. Chick.
Not sure when it's appropriate to ask, but I'll ask and let the chair decide. with the multiple requests have been made to look into pathway for mental health and substance abuse, when would be the appropriate time to talk about a work group or what we might do to assist in that?
Well, that's a good question. Now's a good time since we're allotting time for that. But I have a bad time sometimes sticking my foot in my mouth when I. But I think it's the Board of EMS is a licensing agency. We're not the same as KIMSA, which is an industry, group. And so, we're certainly in support of doing something like that and doing whatever we can to help, but I'm not sure we have the regulation that says we can do that. Maybe I'm wrong there, but some people talk about the Board of Nursing, and their group is actually a separate company out of Kansas City that they refer all their folks to, and that they accept the findings and the treatment of that group. And so I certainly think you know, it would be great if we can move work hand in hand with KMSA to get this thing done, and I think we should. I'm just not sure how big a part in that we can play. Is that about accurate, Joe? Yeah. So. You're working with? Great. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, so yeah, regulations, if that requires regulations, I think that would be something that the group needs to, you know, maybe we need to see what the Board of Nursing has in their regulations, see if there's something we can parallel with that and move on with that. So. But I'm not deep enough into the regs to know what we would need to do. So, Joe?
I just want to make sure that folks understand on the board, since there are a lot of new faces, the board has never revoked somebody's certificate for identifying with mental health illness or substance abuse or anything. We have entered into a single consent agreement where an individual opted to do that as opposed to there was a possibility, the possibility at that point was the fact that if they admitted to doing that here, it could have been, there was a concern that it could be used criminally as an admission, and it would have resulted in a significant federal penalty on that aspect. And so I think the regulatory framework that's being asked is to protect the disclosure to being specific for administrative purposes and not allow it to be disclosed for criminal. And I think that's the regulatory framework that's being asked for that we don't necessarily have clearly.
I think I agree with you on that, Joe, and at least to my current understanding. I agree. I think that it's just an important distinction that providers feel comfortable in asking for help rather than putting a patient in danger.
Okay.
So, yeah, no, okay. No adverse actions have been taken by this board
right.
to revoke sure. or do anything to say, yes, we're going to take away your certificate because you told us this.
Sure.
In fact, the board has done nothing but enter into agreements to say, get the help you need, and we'll continue to allow you to be licensed.
Okay. Well, I think to put this in motion, I think we, you know, maybe we can go ahead and put a motion on the floor to have the board staff start working towards such a regulation.
I'd be happy to make that motion to ask board staff to look into the pathway for the legislation that is necessary to support this.
Okay. Okay. It's been moved. It's been seconded by Representative Essex. Any further discussion? Kind of a quiet group today. Mm-hmm. Yes, Dr. Foate. Oh, you were going to just ready to vote. Okay. All in favor of proceeding with this process, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, good. Motion carries. Joe has his walking orders. Okay. We need to have an executive session. Mr. David.
I'd like to move for the board to enter into executive session for the purpose of discussing non-elected personnel for a period not to exceed 10 minutes. I would like to also include the board's attorney, Sam Feathers. And I understand that in the past we've left rather than they left.
Correct.
What's
same thing. It's going to be
the same thing.
Session across the hall. We'll keep the meeting open here.
Okay. Very good.
What? Okay. Would you consider amending that to at least 15 minutes? 10 minutes will be.
Yeah, 15 minutes.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. We move into executive session. All approved, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. We'll move into the executive session starting at 10:20. We're back in session. We don't have any. Oh, sorry. Okay. We're back in session. We don't have any processes that require a motion at this time. And so does anybody have any further questions or discussion from board members? Okay. Hearing none, we'll be adjourned.
Thank you. Oh, Mr. Chair, you do still have one item on the agenda. You do.
Sorry.
Sorry.
I got an old agenda.
Oh.
Sorry.
My apologies.
I only had four of them this month. Joe has something about a fee structure. It shouldn't take long.
Yeah, so this just went out right at the tail end of things, and my apologies on that for getting it out after the agenda comment. But fees. Currently, regulation states that they're non-refundable. They don't necessarily explicitly prohibit us from transferring that to another application, but they also don't explicitly allow us to transfer that to another application. We do have a large number of applicants that are filling out the wrong application, where we've looked at the wording at the beginning to try to get them guided down the right path on that, and it just, the wording was one aspect of it in getting going. So the request was actually of the board for us to amend the regulation to add a subsection that would allow us to transfer that application fee, very clearly allow us to transfer that application fee across once. So when they reach out to us, if it was a renewal application and it should have, sorry, if it was an initial application, it should have been a renewal application, we could just take that fee and apply it to the other application. So that was the ask within here. It's something we should have asked before the renewal session kicked in, because that is where we see an uptick. But we're actually seeing a lot of folks that are applying for initial application when they should be applying for legal recognition and vice versa. So,
okay. I think we just need a motion to proceed with that that policy, that we can transfer the fee from one application to another.
I would make that motion.
I'll second.
Okay, moved and seconded. Any further discussion or questions? Signify if all in favor, or everybody in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Okay. Any opposed? Okay. Motion carried.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
No problem. Okay. I think now we're done. Leave. Go away. Bye.